This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley, listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com, certainly our great sponsors of this show and of the Inside Carolina website. Visit Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street and online. They need your support. We shop local. They are as local as it gets for Chapel Hill, and they've got great gear for anything Carolina-related. Also, before I forget, take the time to rate this podcast via iTunes or however you get your podcast medium. If you're watching on YouTube, take time to subscribe to the Inside Carolina podcast. Somewhere on your screen, there's a link to subscribe. Inside Carolina always bringing the greatest content for North Carolina sports. Today is sort of a elite version of the 40 Club podcast. A lot of you have come to know our shows when we talk to former players. We call them the 40 Club podcast because it's a 40-year decision, not just a four-year decision when you pick a university or in a school. First, I need to introduce the important people in this show, and I'm going to start by my co-host. Said it before, I'll say it again, I'm going to embarrass him, Mr. Freddie Kiger, one of the pillars of North Carolina sports media. Freddie, I appreciate you taking time to join us.
Tommy, what a treat to be asked to join you and to be with two very, very special people, with Stephen and, of course, with Larry. What a treat to be a part of this show. So thank you very much for extending that opportunity.
Absolutely. No-brainer choice to do it. I'm glad you agreed to do it. Freddie mentioned the guests we have. If you're on YouTube, you can see them. If you're on iTunes or listening in your car, you're going to have to wait till I introduce them. I'm going to start with an author, Mr. Stephen DeMorris. And Stephen is relevant to this podcast because he took the opportunity to write a book about one of the Carolina legends, and probably one of the Carolina legends that the story hasn't been told as much as some of the others, perhaps. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. We're longtime Inside Carolina lurkers and posters.
Yep. And Catherine Walton was, when that email came through to me to ask us to handle this show and to talk to you guys, it was an easy yes. And so I want to start, and again, if you're on YouTube, I'll go ahead and sneak it to the listeners. Larry Miller's joining us. Mr. Miller, how you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you very much for the invite.
Absolutely. Well, this is your story, so I want to talk to Stephen about how this all came to be. If you've read the book, you know this story, but it's great hearing it. If you haven't read it, you need to pick it up as soon as possible. But Stephen, how did we manage to, of all the things that have gone on in 2020, how did we manage to be on this Zoom podcast right now?
Well, I'm a New England Yankee who met a girl from Statesville, North Carolina in New York when we were writing a soap opera called Guiding Light together. And when we got married and moved to Connecticut, we were both basketball fans, although from different conferences, since I was in Big East territory. And she always told me how great North Carolina was and could always recite the 1968 Carolina lineup from when she was a preteen. And I kept hearing this name, Larry Miller, like it was God. And when we eventually decided to move south and live outside Chapel Hill for decades now, even though I'm still a new guy, I guess, we would go back to Rhode Island. And at one point, we stopped over in Allentown to break up the trip. And she looked up at the roadside and said, Catasauqua Road. Bing, Catasauqua equals Larry Miller. And she decided she was going to track him down and find him. And worked at it on the internet and whatever, and said, I'm going to get a cup of coffee and go knock on his door and say hello. Many of us would not do that. She is very intrepid. And met him, went into the backyard where he was gardening and chatted with him and had a very nice 20-minute visit. He was very gracious about this stranger dropping in on him. And as we drove down the Shenandoah back to North Carolina, we began to realize there's a whole story here that has not been told. Everybody knows about Carolina from the TV and the Final Fours and Michael Jordan onward, but there's very little of Larry on tape. There was no ESPN. There, you know, there was like one Saturday game a year. This was like when there were only three TV channels, really, back in the 60s. So, and she had found out from chatting with him in his garden that he has a lot of stories to tell. And about a week after we got home, she received an envelope in the mail, and it's got, you know, I guess she'd been talking about the television business, and he had a headshot from when he was taking classes at Universal when he was playing for the LA Stars. But also in that was a letter that she had written him 50 years previously. And this was like, I call it a message in a bottle from the past. It was like, made the whole project seem like kismet. And of course, Larry just sent all his stuff home to his mom throughout his whole career. And she just put it in a trunk. He didn't even know it was there. But after her visit, he went and dug around in there. And sure enough, there was this letter she'd written him in the past. And at that point, we pressed him to tell his stories in a way that everybody could become part of, because everybody he'd been so beloved while he was down there. And I called her the Larry Whisperer. I don't know that anybody else in the world could have gotten Larry to feel comfortable telling these stories. And I basically said to him at the start, I want to tell this from your point of view. And he said, great, because I want everybody to have a good time. I'm not looking to expose anybody or criticize anybody. I had a great ride and I want the reader to have a great ride too. And I said, fine. So if you tell me everything that you want to say, I'll let you look at it when it's done. Anything you don't like doesn't have to be in there. But 95% of what he told me is in there. You know, we deleted a few names to not embarrass some people, but it was the whole project was a pleasure, especially talking to a lot of his old teammates who were delighted to hear that he was doing this, couldn't believe it. But, you know, Bobby Lewis talked to me for an hour, Billy Cunningham talked to me for an hour, Jim Delaney talked to me. I mean, all these, meeting his buddies and getting the sense of how his team felt about him made it a fun project for me too.
It's if you're watching on YouTube, here's the book. Go get it. It's great. I put all my sticky notes in here on different things that caught my eye. I ran through more than one sticky note pad. So what I want to do is I want to bring in this man that we're talking about. And Larry, I said hello earlier, but I know that from reading the book, people talking about you and about your accomplishments is not your most favorite thing. So you're going to have to bear with us because we're going to spend a little time doing it.
No problem. I enjoyed that ride. So I enjoyed talking about it.
Well, let's look at 2-time ACC player of the year, only Carolina player to do that. 2-time All-American. Still to this day, you're 7th on the all-time scoring list at Carolina. The only other 3-season guys ahead of you are Lenny Rosenbluth and Charlie Scott. And I think, and I want to ask you this just right out of the gate, and then we'll sort of go through your history. But I don't think there's any Carolina historian, and I hope Mr. Kiger will agree with me, that does not believe that Larry Miller is one of the, if not the most important pillar in the legacy and the dynasty that Dean Smith ultimately built. Can you share what hearing that and what thinking about that means to you personally?
Well, it means that I was very fortunate to come along when I did, and very fortunate to make that decision. A lot of people say he was lucky to get me. Well, I was lucky to get him. And the timing was so incredible because they were going through that transition period. And even though it started out, if I could have played as a freshman, who knows what would have happened, because Billy Cunningham was there, Bobby Lewis was there, and the three of us could have been really an awesome trio, and we probably could have taken Carolina, you know, pretty well into the playoffs. But times weren't, you know, they didn't call for that. So fortunately, when I was there, fortunately, and I say this incredibly selfishly, that these guys that followed me came along, that I had the opportunity to help recruit these guys. And had they not followed me, the story would not be anything to talk about right now, because it was an incredible convergence of talent and good people that came together at that time. And we were fortunate to all meet up and move forward. So I'm the focal point of it, but certainly not the reason why it all happened. I hope I explained a little bit.
Yeah, it's like I said, for me, you were a little bit before my time personally, but I know plenty about the Carolina process, and my brothers were older, my father, of course, and they always talked about Larry Miller and Bobby Lewis. And of course, my dad graduated from Carolina in 50. So he was right around the time Rosenbluth came after that, won the national championship. But you guys sort of came in and set the tone. Let's back up a little bit to your time in Pennsylvania. And this is something, this is a question I always ask people, and I hope it's not too deep or philosophical, whatever, but reading this book about you and reading about your time in high school and through there, the one thing that came out to me was the toughness that you played with. And when we talk about great athletes, I've always said that person is different. And it's a positive thing to say, but that person's different, or they have it. One thing, and then I'm going to defer to Mr. Kiger for a little while, but one thing I wanted to ask you is, how much of your grit, toughness, whatever you want to call it, when you were growing up, came from within, maybe a God-given innate ability, versus how much of that was instilled in you by your folks, by your community, and by the times that you grew up in?
Well, I can tell you right now, my father kicked a lot of it into me because I was a bad boy back then, and I could have taken all that energy into somewhere else. But starting with the time he caught me smoking, and then kicked my butt for a good mile or so, and made me stay out of a swimming suit for about 2 weeks. I took all that energy. He gave me a basketball, and I took that, all that wayward, unfocused energy and put it into that, sports. And it became, I didn't know I had it in me, but I had a work ethic that was probably as good or better than anybody. I mean, I could actually go until I couldn't go and then go some more. And that later on in my life, I ran 3 marathons without drinking any water. One of them, the first one I ran without, I couldn't take any water because I didn't know how to drink when I was running. So I ran that whole time without taking any water in. So, but that just goes to show you that I took all that negative energy and put it into the work. And then other people, you know, he made me weights, he made me workout stuff. But that became an obsession with me, just to work out and to get better. And it probably came from the people around me, but it definitely came from my father, my family, that supported me in that effort. But to this day, I still have that, believe it or not. I can still, I walk certain places when it's, you know, almost every day I walk 3 or 4 or 5 miles and I'm delivering books right now. People who are 3 miles away asked me for some books. So I said, oh, good, I'll bring them right up. And I put them in my backpack and walk them up there. So I'm still doing it. I'm still crazy.
Larry, at what point when you were growing up became the realization that you were pretty good at what you were doing, regardless of whether it was football, baseball, or basketball? Was there a realization moment when you went, hey, I have something that I can build upon?
7th or 8th grade, I believe it was, that I knew I was going to be pretty good, because when I was playing with the older guys, I'm talking about some pro athletes, I was holding my own. So I knew I could do it then. But at that time, you know, I wasn't as big as I was. So I didn't know exactly, you know, if I was going to grow any bigger or if what I was going to play, but I knew I could play somewhere. And that's always been my gift, is that I could play on certain teams. It didn't matter to me if I scored, but if I got on the court, I would help the team, you know, either by rebounding, stealing the ball, playing defense, whatever it was, you know, I could help. And fortunately, there was a few coaches that recognized that and gave me the opportunity, you know, to play.
Well, one of those coaches happened to be right about the time you were ready to go to the next level of play, was a gentleman by the name of Vic Bubas.
Absolutely, yeah. Vic.
How are we, of Carolina lore, how close was it that Larry Miller wound up in a royal blue uniform?
Well, I would say you were, the morning I chose the school of my future, I didn't know where I was going. I woke up that morning, which was graduation night. I think it was June 8th, pretty close. And I still hadn't absolutely decided which school to go to. And I asked my mother and my father, I said, okay, folks, now you've met all the people, all the players, you've been to the schools. Where do you want me to go? What do you think? I'm not asking you to tell me where to go. I'm asking you where you think I should go. And lo and behold, my parents were so miraculously perceptive that they didn't, no matter how much they wanted to or thought, they wouldn't tell me their opinion. Because you heard a lot about players being forced to go to certain schools by their parents. Well, I was totally opposite. They wouldn't tell me where they wanted me to go. Well, you know, we love Coach Bubas. We love Coach Smith. And we love the schools. And Larry, it's up to you. And so that was their input to my decision. So I probably made it sometime that afternoon or something like that.
Well, Ken Roseman had a lot to do with that decision as well, sitting on the front porch with your dad, sipping on PBRs, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he said he didn't even like beer either, but I did, so that was good. I was happy with him drinking a beer with us. Yeah, he was a wonderful man, Southern gentleman all the way.
How much, and there's a quote in the book, and I'm paraphrasing because I want people to read it for themselves, how much was the quote? Well, if you go to Duke, you're going to realize you're just 5 minutes from heaven.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard a lot of stuff like that. But I did feel comfortable being at Chapel Hill and with the players and the students and stuff like that. I think unfairly, Duke didn't have the social environment that Carolina had. And back then, I kind of liked to hang out. That was my weakness.
Was Billy Cunningham a big part of those who here in school helped look after you, so to speak, help make your transition comfortable?
Look after me was probably the wrong word. At least had me have to chase after me, keep me straight. No, but Billy was, I had a ball with Billy. He was a wonderful guy to hook up with. Because the first time down there, the famous deal was they had a student gathering for me at, I think it was Woolen Gym. And he said they want the students to meet you. I don't know how many they had there, but they were going to greet me and all that stuff. He said, would you rather go there or would you rather go down to the shack for a beer? And I said, what are you kidding me? After the shack. So I'm sorry to the students that, we stood up that day, but ultimately I got there.
What how is it to play and be such a great high school star and then have to go to college and sit for a year? I know there was a freshman team, but how would people today can't fathom that being the way things are. How was that for a guy like you coming down from Pennsylvania with plenty of reputation and then having to basically watch the JV or play on the JV team, for lack of a better way?
Well, that was tough, but I knew that coming in what the situation was, and I don't know that there were many schools that you could play as freshman back then, so it wouldn't have made much difference if I went somewhere else.
Right, it's just a different time. Yeah. I mean, especially today when we've got all these guys that play very little or play as a freshman and move on or skip it all together.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, there was no way. I mean, at that time, you were on the freshman team, and you just couldn't play. I mean, there was a big to-do about Phil Ford being able first to play as a freshman because it just wasn't possible, which also made those late 60 and early 70 games freshman games that you did not want to miss when you started talking about the Larry Millers and the collection of talent that came into Duke and to NC State right here. It was not to be missed.
Yeah, and it's just, like I said, the expectations were known, but I just think it's still, looking back, given how things are today, that's just wild to me that they didn't. I know why they did or why they said they did. So you're a freshman in Chapel Hill. You freely admit you like to hang out. Describe that freshman year, because I know how it was for me as just a regular student. How was that freshman year for Larry Miller, the present and future basketball star at Chapel Hill?
Well, it was a great experience. I can't deny that. I went to parties, at fraternities and stuff like that, and probably a sorority or two, but that was a whole new thing. Southern hospitality is the word for it. It was wonderful. I mean, I can't say anything else about it.
I'm going to take that up to a next level, and Stephen captured this so extremely well. Larry, how was it with your happy-go-lucky nature, your freestyle living, if you will? Because Coach Smith had practices down to the minute. How did the freewheeling mix with Coach Smith's structure?
Very well. I understood. Rules are rules, and the coach is a coach. No matter how hard I played outside of the arena, so to speak, I never I don't think I was ever late to the practice. So, yeah, so, I respected that very much.
That was an interesting dichotomy in the book. But when you crossed the lines, or when it was trying to walk on the court, the lines of the court, it was all business.
No question.
I'm going to jump in right now and talk about our sponsor, Johnny T-Shirt, and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Of course, on Franklin Street and online, get everything you need Carolina-related. Football gear is important now, football season about to get started. But, of course, if you're listening to this podcast, you're also interested in basketball and basketball gear, whether it's jerseys, shirts, hats, whatever you need, Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Get all you need anytime, any day of the week, 24/7 online, or go by and see them at the store. They'll greet you at the door, give you your order, help you out, do whatever you need. Great customer service. Inside Carolina premium subscribers, of course, get 10% off your everyday order. Take another short break, pay the bills, be right back.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it up.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars, new season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
We're back with more on the Inside Carolina podcast. I have Larry Miller with us, sort of the 40 Club with Larry Miller time. Let's get back to it. Describe the opportunity to get out there your sophomore season. Coach Smith had a rough – these days, Coach Smith probably doesn't last, given the nature of the beast that is college coaching or coaching in general. But just speak to your experience there at Carolina building the program. I don't want to get too far in the weeds about specific games, but when did you as a player and part of this team understand that you guys were moving the needle for Coach Smith?
Well, we didn't really know, and that's the interesting point. At the end of my sophomore year, and like I told you before about recruiting these guys, by the end of my sophomore year, we were in flux, basically. We didn't know about Coach Smith's future, but also about ours. I mean, we talked about, transferring or something like that. I mean, I don't know how serious it was, but we actually talked about, because even after we signed all the guys that followed up, the Rusty Clark, Rubar, Joe Brown, and Bill Buninieri, we got those guys. We didn't know how they would turn out. So you never know. It was a tough period, but fortunately, that class panned out, and then we got Charlie, and then everything started falling together. Then after that, I mean, it was a piece of cake recruiting for Coach Smith, because, I mean, we had a lot of guys come down to Carolina to check it out, as recruits. But the guys that came was what made it. Uh-huh. And that was the difference.
Yeah, that class of 1969 was the pat of butter that made things really, really take light and do well. And then, of course, Charlie came. You were very instrumental in helping the campus and the community welcome Charlie Scott, were you not?
Oh, yeah. I was there when we recruited him, and we had a good time with him, even though he didn't say a word during dinner and stuff like that. But we pulled him aside afterward and told him that we really wanted him at Carolina, and that if he came there, even though it was a period of racial, divide, basically, it was just, becoming integrated, stuff like that. We told him, you come here, and part of the team will protect you. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, anybody going to bother you or anything like that. And if you come here, you're going to have a chance of winning the national title. And that's what we promised him. And I think he liked that. He trusted us. Yeah. To this day, I think he's real happy with that decision. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's spoken. He has been on this podcast and talked about that and you guys back then and working him through that, those times, those rough times, potentially rough times that he could have had down here in North Carolina. Let's move to your senior year. You guys have gotten really good. You're going into the tournament. Let me back up. ACC tournament. This is another thing, people, and I want to draw the contrast. It didn't matter how good your team was when you played. If you didn't win the ACC tournament, you were done. How much pressure is that on players? Or is it just another one of those things that it is what it is for you guys back then? I mean, is it added pressure knowing that we may be really good, but if we lose this game, we're not going to the NCAA tournament and it's all over with? How did players deal with it back then? Well,
I don't know how other players dealt with it, but it was I told my parents, I said, look, you come down any game of the year, no problem, but you can't come down during the ACC tournament. I said, because I am so focused, because it was a playoffs, basically. No matter what anybody says, it was a playoffs. And if you were in the ACC back then, you had to win 7 games to win a national title, not 6. And we actually won 6 straight games. So, but I told my parents I couldn't come down because I can't sleep at night. I walk around all day long, pacing around and just waiting for the games. Once the games start, I'm okay. But it's just thinking about them. And that was probably the most stressful times. And then after it was over and we won the games, then I was like, I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't sleep after the game. And the next day, even not had slept at all, I get in the car, put the top down and drive for hours, putting music on just because I was so happy it was over with and we won. It was incredibly, incredibly, intensely pressurized experience.
Yeah, that's a definite difference from college basketball today versus your time. The ACC tournament.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think most people, when they look back in the ACC, they think of the Maryland-NC State game.
101-100 point.
Yeah, when those guys, you lose and you're done. Let's talk about the 1968 season a little bit. This is probably the year – you look back over the course of Dean Smith and North Carolina basketball and their years that you see and you say, well, Carolina should have won or easily could have won the national championship. You guys got to the edge.
Right.
Describe that feeling there, working your way through the ACC tournament, through that NCAA tournament, and then being in the Final Four, knowing what was coming as far as who was going to be there, because there was little doubt who was going to be on the other side of the bracket for the most part during those times.
Yeah, well, during that year, Houston had beaten UCLA down in Houston. That was the first nationally televised game, college basketball, I believe. We watched that, and incredibly, Houston won. And then the pregame, the game before we played, we had just beaten Ohio State, and we watched that UCLA when they come back and I guess they won by 40 points or something like that. It was something almost ridiculous. But we still knew we had to play them. But in my mind, to this day, and I don't care who you talk to, I still think we had the better team than that. Because if you look at the players – our 5 and their 5, just put them there. I think we had a great matchup other than Alcindor, but Rusty, you know, he could, against Bob Lanier, he had, 27 rebounds or something like that. Mm-hmm. Something ridiculous. Vaughn was 30. So he could hold his own. And Charlie was there. You know, we had talent. We just, we made the decision to slow down. And that's, we averaged 85 points that year, 87 or 100. So we felt we should run with them, and we didn't. So I don't know.
That's one of my questions was, Larry, do you think back that if you could have one of those moments that you could do over, you would have liked to have gone into that first half and run with UCLA? Because I remember watching the game and thinking that we just looked uncomfortable. We looked tepid. We didn't it wasn't the same Carolina team that I recall watching throughout the season.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we just weren't. And, you know, it is what it is, like you said, but I don't have regrets, but, you know, because we can't wish over in this life. You got to live with what you did, but we got there.
Yeah, you did.
You had some wonderful teammates back then, and the book details a lot of those relationships, but looking back now, who were the guys, I don't want to say favorite teammates, because I know the answer.
Yeah, we can. They're all still favorites. I still keep in touch with all of them. So.
Yeah, so you know, you had Bobby Lewis your first couple of years and all, and you had Grubauer there. I mean, describe those Carolina teams for people like me or people younger than me that don't realize that a man that's 6'3", 210 pounds, you, can be such a physical presence on the court. And describe how the game was back then, because there's some great stories in the book Stephen provided that, you know, there were a lot of hand-to-hand combat back then.
A lot of physical, yeah, it was. A lot of contact.
How was that for you to deal with on a nightly basis?
No, I enjoyed it. I didn't mind getting under the boards and stuff like that. But the only problem was with in practice with Rusty, his elbows came right up to my nose. So when he stuck his elbows out, I get hit in the face all the time. But the game was pretty much, you know, we like I said, we averaged 85 points, you know, close to 90. We ran the ball, we, you know, moved it. And Coach Smith was, you know, not one to, you know, everybody took decent shots. We weren't just like freelancing. Mm-hmm. We were organized, but we ran. And that was our style, and played good defense too. So I was proud of the teammates. And as far as who was my favorite, they were all my favorite. And I didn't run with them after we got in trouble for partying too much, because I didn't want to cause anybody else any problems. After that, I just kind of hung out alone afterwards.
Who were some of your favorite listening, some of your favorite artists that you were listening to? All the time I've heard from so many people that you love to listen to albums, you love doing, you know, you enjoyed your rock and roll. Your favorites?
I had a little portable record player I would take with me and along, you know, just stupid little records. And then that was before they had, I think they didn't have cassettes back then, but take this little record player with me on the road in the back of the bus and play it and stuff like that. All the guys were popular back then, you know, you name it, and I listened to it. I loved the music, you know. And Carolina was a great place to see that stuff. They had all kinds of bands and, you know, groups come in, great holidays, festivals. It was really neat. They had all kinds of people come in. I saw some great groups down there. And I got on stage with a couple, too. Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels.
You were dancing with the Mitch Ryder and Detroit Wheels.
The Wheels come up there on stage. So, Yeah, we had all kinds of great memories.
I want to bring Stephen back in, if I may. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah.
There are so many wonderful stories. The process of getting those stories from Larry, did it come fairly easy?
Did it come easy to get the stories from him?
Yes. I mean, was there any arm twisting that you have to kind
yes.
of maneuver to get Larry well, to open up about that?
Now, he enjoys talking about some of these episodes. I mean, as I noted in the book, some people name their car. He names his parties. So those were, and of course, the basketball stuff, too. Some of the things that I enjoyed the most was his interactions with the home front, in a sense. You know, the fact that this guy, you know, saves the letter from the guy at the post office, you know, and the fact that he actually had, this doesn't really get into the book, but Larry's initial idea for this book was to do something with the fan letters he got from the younger kids when he was playing, called These Crazy Carolina Kids. And he had correspondences with all these 10-year-olds when he had time to write the letters and stuff. So he wasn't just Joe Namath, you know. I mean, he's kind of a mensch, you know. So I love hearing the stories about hanging out with buddies these days. And you know, I mean, who else would be hanging around with his pals and saying, you know, I wonder how many people come to my funeral, and they say, let's find out, and they decide to try it out, you know. That's the kind of stuff that you don't go looking for that story. You stumble across it. And it was just interesting to get to know him through an entire arc of a life, from a high school kid to a retired guy, as opposed to just the glory years, you know. So that made it a richer book for me.
Well, Larry, you were very wise to say you wanted this to be written as if it would be a fun ride, and you could not have picked a better source. Stephen made it a fun ride. It was wonderfully written, and I felt like I was sitting at a bar, perhaps the shack with the dirt floor, and listening to someone tell me all these fantastic stories. So kudos to you, Stephen, for your ability to do such.
Well, it was fun, and it was fun to hear other people tell stories about him too. Like Joe Brown, the night that he fell asleep in a car and woke up in a roadhouse somewhere and didn't know where he was. You know, I have an idea that for all his buddies in school and all his teammates too, it was pretty nice to ride shotgun with Larry Miller. And I enjoyed it.
Awesome. Larry and Stephen, I appreciate you putting it together. I don't want to keep you guys too terribly long because I know that everybody has other things to do, but I do have a couple questions. People on our message boards wanted to ask you some questions, and I'll sort of generalize them. Can you talk about the rivalry? Well, let's talk about the rivalry you had with Duke, or the Carolina-Duke rivalry, from your perspective, especially given how close it was that you went with Vic Bubas to Durham. What was it like as a Carolina player then playing in that rivalry game? I'll ask you about NC State in a minute.
Yeah, that was it was a very respectful rivalry. Unlike some others with Duke, it was, they were a class act because they had Bubas there. Coach Bubas, and everybody played above board, and we respected each other, and they had great players there. So that was one of the finest rivalries that you could possibly imagine. And even the Duke players would come over to Carolina to, you know, party after games and stuff like that. So of the rivalries, I enjoyed that one probably better than any. Even though a title was usually on the line when you played against Duke.
Yeah, you talk about they came over. they came over a plenty. I was at Carolina from 89 to 93, and those guys would come over all the time, party in Chapel Hill. And we talked to Jawad Williams not too terribly long ago. And Jawad, I believe it was Jawad, said that it just sort of stopped several years back. And that's not a part of going back and forth to campuses, playing pickup on each other's campuses, just sort of quit back in the mid-2000s. And I think that's lost these days because the fans might not like each other, but certainly the, you know, the players had a mutual respect for each other.
Exactly.
You mentioned other rivalries. Was NC State maybe in that other rivalry category when you were in Chapel Hill?
Yeah, it was. Sometimes it got bad, yeah.
Tell us about those games.
Well, actually, I filed out the only game that I ever filed out in Chapel Hill was when they broke out in a riot, you know, basically at the end of the game. So I couldn't get involved in it, you know, in the scuffle. But it was a lot of, you know, like dislike or something like that. I don't know what you want to say, but there was a lot of physical, you know, not good physical play.
So, yes, sort of like it is now these days. I mean, the NC State rivalry has always been different for North Carolina. At least from the NC State side, there's a lot more, I don't like to say hatred, but there's a lot of that. Yeah. There's especially on the football side, the guys talk about the mutual dislike there with NC State.
I don't know what it was. I don't know how it started or what, but it was kind of that way. You're right.
So let me ask you a couple more questions and don't want to intrude, but I want to ask, are any regrets that you have? And if we want to leave it straight into Carolina time, we can. But one thing from the book I've learned is you've lived one hell of a full life. And to be honest, as somebody that's just south of 50 at the moment, I hope one day I can say I lived as full a life as Larry Miller has. But have you had any regrets over the course of your time here?
Yeah, probably that in the 1968 championship game, I didn't dunk over Al Center in the first play of the game because I had an opportunity. I went in there. We were kind of running the four corners, and I drove down the middle, and I tried to lay it up, and I clanked it. I should have just dunked it, you know. Would have been disallowed, but it would have set the tone. So that's about it.
That's awesome. Sort of like Pat Ewing trying to set the tone against Carolina in 82 by blocking everything that came anywhere near. Didn't work for him, but
I was sitting on the third row of that game.
Yeah, I read that in the book and I'm thinking, what a great view.
And I didn't even call Coach Smith to get tickets. I called Leonard Lay, my buddy from who's a writer. And he got the Louisville band tickets for me. You know, I purchased them.
Nice. So yeah. What does Dean Smith mean to you?
Everything. He was a great person. He was one of the best people I ever met in my life. And he was with me on my entire life. He's still with me today. So that's all I can say. Can't say any better thing.
Larry, you have had such an incredible series of events. I mean, as Tommy has said, you've lived a full life. And you've enjoyed the ride yourself. What part of that ride in Chapel Hill do you still hold closest to you? What's closest to you when you think back to your days here at the University of North Carolina and Chapel Hill?
That I chose it. That's probably the closest thing I can say to anything about it, that I chose the place. Perspicacity, whatever you want to call it, it was a choice that I could never regret. I mean, it is my life. That probably guided me throughout my life was Chapel Hill. Just the thought of wherever I was in my life, I always thought of Chapel Hill. And you could always go back there and feel at home. And that, you can't say that about a lot of things. I was fortunate that I made that decision. I met such great people, and I'm still enjoying them today. And actually, Monty Diamond is in a book with Buddy, and Jim Delaney are coming through town later on this month and visit. So what better can you say about that place than that it draws people?
Yeah, you can always come home here. And I'll say this to both of you, particularly to you, Larry. We're going to leave the front porch light on. So you're always, always welcome in Chapel Hill and Carolina, because there's so many people who have so many wonderful, fond memories. And all the good things in your life, how wonderfully and how hard you have worked for them, richly deserved. We're all very proud of you.
Thank you very much. I'm proud to be part of the deal too. I'm proud to be a Tar Heel. Always.
Well, Charlie Scott said late in the book that sometimes you got to let people talk good about you. Let me let you close the show in your own words. And we do it with all of these former players. And, you know, I think it's apt here. Larry, how do you want to be remembered?
Oh, wow.
We close it on a deep note.
You are. Actually, just to be remembered and know that you made an imprint or an impression that people remember you on a fondly, let's say, that you tried to be as good a person as you could and treated people right and lived right. Like I say, I can live with the earth. That's one of my biggest joys, is to be in my garden. And the way I treat the earth is the way I want to treat people to treat me, and the way I try to treat them, respect and care for them. So I don't know. You guys are getting me real deep here.
Well, that was absolutely a great answer. And that's what I was looking for. And I think that everybody that's listening to this, watching this, and that reads the book will agree with you that your hope to how you want to be remembered is how you will be remembered. And I want to again say thank you for taking the opportunity to talk to us and sharing your story. Larry Miller time was a treat for me to read. It's a treat for all Carolina fans to read. And Larry, again, I've said it a million times. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. And I enjoyed meeting you guys. And
awesome.
Hopefully we'll be talking again.
Absolutely. Well, Freddie said the porch light is open. This computer screen is forever open. And if one day we can get out of this social distancing stuff,
yeah,
maybe we can sit around and have that beer and talk about it all.
Tell some more stories, because I got a lot more.
Uh-oh. Part two.
Volume two, Stephen. Volume two.
We held back, yeah, a lot.
Great times.
Stephen, I just want to make sure. Stephen, thank you so much.
Yep.
For picking up the ball, so to speak, and making this a project. This is just wonderful to have. I can't say enough how, because I know how much research you put in, and this is so well researched and so well written. Thank you
for
picking one of our favorites and running with it.
Well, thank you. It was a great opportunity and sort of a labor of love, and I'm glad people are happy with it.
Absolutely. Many thanks to Larry Miller, Stephen DeMorris, and of course, Freddie Kiger, my host. You've been listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Rate us, review us, subscribe to the podcast. Be on the lookout down the road, maybe part two of Larry Miller time. Guys, it's been a pleasure. That'll do it for us.
Hello, fellas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount+, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.